Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 25th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features an account of the removal of the John C. Calhoun statue from Marion Square, moves by two of the state's biggest cities to mandate mask usage in certain places. Lawmakers approved $1.2 billion in federal COVID-19 dollars. The governor unveiled a new restaurant safety plan, and we look at the massive testing effort underway in the state. And again, sorry that this episode is late. I had a busy day covering the Calhoun statue removal, including sleeping in Marion Square. Well, actually, there was never any sleeping. I was awake for like 36 hours over the past 2 days. Super awesome fun time. Thank you all for being supportive, and thank you for bearing with us in this podcast. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. Tell us what's going on in your world. We'd love to know what you're doing, if you're out protesting, your thoughts on some of the issues of the day, and what you're trying to do to stay safe out there. And tell us about any experiences you've had with COVID-19, whether it's testing, whether you've had it yourself, whether you know someone that's had it. We were so interested in hearing from you and your stories, especially as we see these case numbers continue to skyrocket. Call us at 803-563-7169. Currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 683 deaths, and currently there are 27,842 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 23rd. We hit a new high on Wednesday with 1,291 cases being reported in one day, and 832 hospital beds are currently being occupied by those with COVID-19. These are very, very high numbers here, folks, so please take precautions out there, wear a mask, wash your hands, and maintain social distancing. Okay, so like I said, yesterday I had been awake for more than 24 hours down in Charleston covering the city council's decision to unanimously remove the John C. Calhoun statue atop the 100-foot-tall monument that has been in Marion Square for 122 years. The decision came as a lightning storm rolled through the area, with sporadic flashes of light accentuating the eccentric hair and scowl of the former senator and vice president, who was an ardent supporter and defender of slavery. His time had come. Council held a Zoom video conference call in which 40 people had signed up to speak for a minute each. Take a listen to these comments for and against removing the monument.
This is Reverend Nelson Rivers III, native of Charleston, lived on Blake Street, America Street, and Rutledge Avenue. I support and concur and ask that you wouldn't take down the statue of John C. Calhoun, and you know why. The mayor and I have had extensive conversations about this. I also think you should not relocate it anywhere of significance. It should go to what the state has already paid for. The state paid for a crypt and a grave at St. Philip's Church. He should go there with other dead folk and dead things about Charleston. And thirdly, I think you ought to change the name Calhoun Street. I would suggest Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. There is nothing in Charleston named for Dr. King. That's a whole street, a whole avenue. Secondly, I think that Rutledge, named for John Rutledge, the street I grew up on, Rutledge Avenue, John Rutledge was as bad as Calhoun, and he should have his street changed to Denmark VC Avenue. There are many reasons why we should change these, but I keep hearing folk telling me that when I had no decision, no input, and no standing, I should accept what was done without me. I refuse to. I've been fighting against it for 40 years. I'll fight 40 more. Thank you.
Fantastic. My name is Eric Corcoran. I immigrated from Ireland, a country that has very long history with the British and the oppressors for hundreds of years who did horrific things to the Irish people. But we look at the monuments of these English oppressors and we look up and we say, we won. And it's part of our history. And I truly believe that if you destroy history, you destroy your country. So I beg you, Mr. Mayor, and you leaders, to really think about the long-term effects of this, that we must learn from where we came from in order to grow as a people. That's my heartfelt plea to you tonight.
My name is Bernard Powers, the director for the Center for the Study of Slavery in Charleston at the College of Charleston. And I thank you for the opportunity to say a few words tonight. I want to call your attention to Calhoun as not just a slaveholder, but as one of the main architects of the pro-slavery argument, which meant that slavery was the best of all possible foundations upon which to establish a society and the best of all possible social positions for African people to be consigned to. And this is what Calhoun stood for. The pedestal of his statue has three words: truth, justice, and the Constitution. Those words are not explained. His beliefs with regard to those things are not explained. What is the truth that he stood for? Certainly not the truth of racial equality. Calhoun believed that slavery was necessary.
I'm so sorry, Dr. Powers.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Gentlemen and ladies, I urge you to consider seriously the grave decision you are about to make. Charleston is its history. It is its beauty. The Calhoun statue enhances both. For half the years of our country's existence, this magnificent monument has been a defining icon of our skyline. To remove it is to strike at the heart of our aesthetic and historic identity. By doing so, you would put Charleston on the slippery slope downward into historic amnesia and aesthetic impoverishment. All the founders of this city owned slaves. Are we going to remove every street name and every statue in the city? Are we to denude our city of the memorials which beautify and enrich our environment? Please consider the consequences of such a rash and thoughtless act. Do not erase the icons of memory, sacred to most of our population. This will only cause hate and division, not reconciliation.
That last person was Michael Kogan. The council also received comment from 291 people who supported removing the monument, 50 against, 4 to relocate it, and one person who expressed interest in buying it. And with that vote, council believed to have the legal authority on their side under their reading of the controversial Heritage Act, which prevents movements of statues and building renamings without a supermajority of the State House. And with that, work got underway. Around midnight Wednesday, floodlights illuminated the statue and Marion Square. Contractors began ascending the statue in a boom lift, something that would happen multiple times over the next 17 hours. There was a crowd of a few hundred supporters originally, and one of them was Charleston City Councilman William Dudley Gregory, who told Victoria Hansen why early Wednesday morning he was out in Marion Square watching the process and his history with the statue that he calls intimidating and a symbol of hatred.
Well, it's a symbol of hatred, oppression. It's a symbol that is there to intimidate, to try to keep a certain population in its place. And growing up in Charleston, we couldn't avoid it because I'm a member of Mother Emanuel. So as a kid, sometimes walking to church with my mother, we would pass it. You know, Mom's 99 years old, and I can't wait to tell her tomorrow that it's down.
It was expected to be a relatively quick process, likely completed by daybreak, something the crowd of a few hundred had also hoped. Heavy-duty straps were lowered by a crane and affixed by workers in two boom lifts to the statue. The neon yellow straps were tightened and tense against the bronze statue. The crews then used power tools and saws that showered sparks and clouds of white dust that coated parts of Calhoun's cape and legs as they tried to dislodge the 3-ton statue. Alas, despite modern tools and brains, the sun rose and silhouetted the statue, which remained more than 100 feet in the air, affixed by bronze rods within the monument and reports of epoxy and concrete within there as well. There was not to be an easy made-for-TV removal like we see in protest sites across the country. Around 8 a.m., a diamond bandsaw that was to be used to dismember other parts of the monument was attached to the statue's base and was employed to cut through the stone and metal over the next 9 hours. The work continued as the sun sat over a sparsely populated Marion Square, with TV crews doing cut-ins throughout the morning and afternoon, joggers now stopping by to see the progress, while others were relegated to the shade of the surrounding trees that lined the park. Then, we received word about one of the boom lifts having an issue, leading to further delays. While we stood in the sun watching through TV cameras and intermittently going into my car to catch an AC break, there were moments when we thought the process was complete and the removal was likely imminent, like at 2:15 p.m. when we were told to get back 50 yards from the fence. But that declaration was premature. It was then determined that the bandsaw was not done cutting through the rock and the metal yet, and would have to continue for several more hours until nearby church bells chimed 5 o'clock, including one that played Amazing Grace. But moments after those chimes, this was the sound that filled the air. After all that waiting and a 15-minute heads up, the statue was simply lifted off its base, and within 2 minutes was on the ground. It was then moved again to Calhoun Street onto a flatbed truck, which took it to a temporary storage location where it will remain until a permanent home for it can be found, either at a museum or an educational institution. And a big shout out again to my coworker, Southcount Public Radio's Victoria Hansen, for the interview she got and for following the city council meeting. I was pretty much locked down in Marion Square getting video for the entire 17 hours and had barely enough battery to get through the entire ordeal over that time. But we worked out. Preparation is key, people. And again, some great teamwork with Victoria and the AP's Meg Kennard, who was there alongside me, who was also a one-woman band out there herself. Way to go, Meg. Everyone really kept everyone's spirits up. We kept each other awake, fed, entertained, and informed. So great stuff all around, especially when you have good coworkers. Would not want to be in the trenches with anyone else except those two. Hey, whoa, no, we still got some political news to talk about here. Very busy week, folks. And just like how municipalities jumped on preventative measures at the start of the pandemic, they're doing so now during the peak of it, with cities like Greenville and Columbia implementing mask ordinances this week. In the city of Greenville, customers and employees at grocery stores and pharmacies will be required to wear a face covering or face a $25 fine. In the city of Columbia, people over the age of 10 will be required to wear a mask in public, and employees of businesses in the city limits will be required to wear one or face a $25 fine as well. The emergency ordinance also requires employees to wear a face mask if they interact face-to-face with customers. Businesses that fail to do this will be fined $100. This ordinance goes into effect Friday morning. So bring your masks, people. It's like bringing a reusable bag. Just keep it. Keep it with you in the car. On Tuesday, the South Carolina Senate unanimously approved spending $1.2 billion of the $1.96 billion from the Federal CARES Act to reimburse state expenses for COVID-19-related response. The House did the same on Wednesday. And here's where that money is going. $500 million will go toward replenishing the Unemployment Trust Fund. $270 million will go for reimbursing state and local governments and higher education institutions for COVID-19 costs. $222 million will go for the Department of Education to add an additional 5 instruction days this summer. $125 million for hospital relief, $50 million for broadband mapping, initial infrastructure and hotspots, $42 million to reimburse DHEC, $17 million for a PPE stockpile, and $10 million for a grant administrator. I know, really sexy stuff, folks, right? But that's federal money right there helping us out with all these massive costs that we've incurred so far. And there is a phase two to this that will include more money for broadband as well. Again, this is just the initial outlay. And as we head out, we have an update on Senator Tim Scott's police reform bill, the Justice Act. Well, it has stalled without the needed Democratic support to get to 60 votes, failing just 5 votes short due to disagreement over the bill not outlawing no-knock warrants and chokeholds. Though the bill does collect data on executing such controversial warrants and incentivizes police departments to ban chokeholds by withholding federal funding. We'll have more on this in Saturday's pod. Governor Henry McMaster and other officials in the hospitality and restaurant industries rolled out a new program Tuesday that will accredit restaurants who adhere to health and safety standards and practices. The voluntary program called Palmetto Priority will let restaurants sign up online and commit to a checklist of safety and cleaning protocols, such as having employees wear masks. And restaurants will undergo a virtual or limited scope food safety inspection. Managers will be required to complete certain training and more. They'll then get an 8-inch decal that they can display outside of their restaurant.
And if they do that, if they have to take some training, online training, if they do that, then they will receive this decal. And that means that they are participating and that they are fully compliant. Now, how do we determine that they are fully compliant? Well, that's where the public comes in. And if they have this seal, or and you go in, a customer, and you go in and you see that these requirements are not being met, then you can go on the internet and you can bring that fact to the authority of the Restaurant and Lodging Association. And they will inquire, and they will counsel, and the restaurant will have three chances of not making it. And after the fourth chance, then the decal and the recognition and the clearance is taken back. And as for, I would recommend people, once this program begins and once the decals are available, if you go into a restaurant and it doesn't have this decal, it doesn't have this seal, go somewhere else. That's what I'd do. That's what I'm going to do. And that's what I urge everyone to do.
The program will also allow for feedback from customers online at palmettopriority.com. DHEC and the SC Restaurant and Lodging Association will follow up on any complaints and revoke the decal if warranted. If an employee tests positive for COVID-19 at an establishment, it would not count against the restaurant. DHEC's Acting Director Marshall Taylor gives more detail on the inspection process.
The Palmetto Priority is a formal commitment that restaurant owners can take to show their dedication to adhering to the current recommended precautions for protecting their employees and patrons from COVID-19. DHEC will provide verification that a restaurant meets the criteria to participate in the program. By choosing to dine at a restaurant that has opted to participate in the Palmetto Priority Pledge, customers can rest assured that the restaurant has met the specific requirements established through the South Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association's restaurant reopening guidance.
Really upping the ante here for restaurants to comply with health guidelines out there. But let's remember what Dr. Linda Bell has said in the past, and that is, it's not the places that spread the disease, rather it's the people. So you have to do your part as well in maintaining health safety measures if you choose to dine out. Dr. Patrick Cawley, MUSC CEO, gave an update to a joint panel of lawmakers on Tuesday during a discussion about COVID-19 funding. Specifically, he mentioned testing sites across the state being swamped with demand.
My only fear at the moment is it may not be enough, because what we're experiencing today, we are overrun. Just MUSC as an example, we can do in Charleston at our current sites, I can do about 600-700 a day. Those are all jammed and have been jammed for over a week. All of our other sites across the state can't do that high number, but they do 200-300 a day. They're all jammed. And then all of our at-risk community testing sites that we're doing have really been overrun. We were in AnMed in Anderson County last week. In 2 days, I think we did almost 1,500.
Funding in the coming months could soon become a problem, Cawley said. Here he is responding to a question from Oconee Republican Senator Thomas Alexander, who sits on the Joint Bond Review Committee.
I'm not worried about the money today, but if we keep it up, if we keep it up like it's going, we're going to have a problem in probably August, September.
Well, and of course, we'll be back. So I think, yeah. But again, plus we're going to have some additional, if we get it approved for test. I'm with you. We need to be getting out the communities. DHEC's doing a great job. They've got a lot of different things, but they need to really be focusing on other things. They need to be really utilizing these community partners, these folks that are willing to work with you day in and day out to get the testing done.
Again, that's going to be something we keep our eyes on over the coming months, since we are seeing more cases and more people getting tested. And again, if you need a test, you can find a location at accelerate.sc.gov. They are happening all across the state. They are free, and when you don't need a doctor's recommendation, go and get tested if you need it. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Have you experienced COVID-19 yourself? Have you been tested? Did you test positive? What was your experience with it? Did you have to go to the hospital? Did you have to go to see your doctor? We want to know how it is to deal with this problem. We talk about it a lot, but we really want to hear from people that have experienced it. If you're willing to share, please leave us a message with your name and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. And if you're not comfortable sharing your name, that's fine too. We're all friends here. 803-563-7169. So that being said, AT, do we have any voicemails? Again, going back to when we shamed everybody last week, did that prompt voicemails?
We absolutely still have shame voicemails, yes.
Oh, perfect.
Yep, this is a new caller from Colombia.
Okay, go ahead, caller. Roll tape.
Roll tape?
Roll tape.
Hi, my name is Allie. I'm calling from Columbia, South Carolina. And my coronavirus experience is pretty crazy right now. I'm wearing a mask every time I go out. I don't understand why people don't. But something really interesting that is happening in my life soon is I'm going to a socially distanced prom next week where we have to all stay 6 feet apart and wear a mask, which is really interesting. And so we'll see how that turns out. I am working at a pool, and there's no one out there, which I think is a good sign. Watching Normal People on Hulu, which is really good. But overall, having a great time. Love listening to y'all's podcast on my way to work, about half an hour drive. But it's really crazy living in these uncertain times. So, yeah.
Oh, is that a spider? Is that a spider?
Hold Mother?
On, I have a spider. There's a spider in the house!
Let it, if it's just
it's
up
not,
somewhere,
it
just
looks
leave
like
it be.
It's a tick. It's,
ah! Oh, is it hanging down?
Sorry, everybody. There's a spider in my house. Yeah,
Was it hanging down?
It looked like one of those, it looked like a tick. I know it wasn't a tick, but it was one of those little ones. I mean, you don't want to wake up with it on your face, okay? So I didn't have time to take it outside. This is what happens when I have plants in my house, okay? Spiders like plants. I like plants. We are one in that sense.
You're uncomfortable now.
Yeah. Okay. So don't at me, guys. Everyone's different. You just heard a uncut, raw experience of my life in my own home where I'm not gonna be a victim in my own home. Okay. So just
let's bring it back to Allie.
Okay,
here.
Sorry.
Allie, thank you so much.
Allie, thank you so much for calling. What a great voicemail. Thanks for listening to us. Where's your pool? Can we come hang out, do like a pool podcast? Let us know. Very interesting. Also, we want to know about this prom, this socially distant prom. Are you going to it? You sounded like you might be chaperoning it, maybe. We're wondering. Let us know. Shoot us a voicemail again. Tell us what it's like. Maybe we can even come cover that. I'm very interested to see what a socially distant prom looks like. So thanks for listening, Allie.
If she's attending the prom and she's a high schooler, I mean, our reach is greater than we thought.
Yeah. If you are a high schooler, we didn't mean to insult you. But if you're not, you're welcome for the compliment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay, AT. Well, I'm back. I have survived being awake for 36 hours. I feel fresh. I look fresh.
Yeah, we all
you
know.
Can see me
we
on
all
FaceTime.
Know what you've been doing.
Yeah. So.
You look fresh.
Thank
I
you.
I mean, wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
You just
I mean,
have this rare patina about you right now.
It's a sheen. Yeah, I'm
just sheen.
So this week in South Carolina is on summer hiatus until like mid-August. So as you can see, I'm just growing the beard out now. So the mustache has a friend, but it's not as distinguished. It's not as differentiated now on its own. So I'm going to give you some ASMR. That's
LED
the scruff
ASMR.
Going on right there. I get
that
more of a neck
gross.
Beard. It's like a neck beard. It's.
Oh, okay. Are you going to be toxic online later?
Yeah. Don't at me, bro. What's going on with you? What's new?
I started watching, and I think you might be interested in it. I mean, you should be, okay. If I know you at all, is that I started watching Castle Rock on Hulu. Which
I've always heard of it. I've never watched it.
It's like a reimagining of Stephen King's stories and like mashing them all together. It's kind of interesting. Like the first season, Shawshank Prison is in it, but it's not the Shawshank Redemption. You know, it's sci-fi.
Okay.
But they were, some people work at Shawshank, and Shawshank plays a role in it. And second season, Annie Wilkes is in it, but it's not Misery. And it's also like a little bit Salem's Lot. So it's very strange, very weird stuff.
Yeah, that's something definitely worth checking out there, because I need a little shit. There's two seasons, number of episodes, 20. Okay, that's,
It's not too hard, not too oppressive. Sometimes I don't know if I like it, but my affinity for Stephen King keeps me there.
I mean, right on. He does.
Yeah.
I have since finished my Michael Crichton book.
Ooh, good for you.
And I've since learned how to pronounce his last name. It was really, I mean, you know, like those books, they're so, it's written in 1996, and you don't really necessarily know that.
Pronunciations were different back then.
Well, I mean, they reference like beepers a lot. Yeah, I mean, things were different, you know. But his books are just so easy to like, they're just easy to zoom through, you know, you just check it out.
There's a reason he's so famous, yeah.
And you're just like, dang, man. Like, and he just gets so technical with things. And I mean, I don't know what his process was. He probably had a lot of research assistants, because he can just, like a lot of his books, you know, he gets on one topic and he just must be infatuated with it and just delves into it. Like even the banter his characters have when they're talking about things and these processes and these technicalities, you're just like, gee wee. But, you know.
Jumping gee willikers, Mr.
It really
Crichton.
Makes for it, yeah. Like, I mean, I've never read Jurassic Park or any of those books like Lost World. I've never read them that he wrote.
The book is so much better. The Lost World is so much better than that movie, because there's no girl doing gymnastics to kick a velociraptor in the face.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Jeff Goldblum's daughter.
Yeah. Very weird.
Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll read those just to, because everyone just says how different the books are from the movie, of course. But I want to know more about the characters and how they're different, too. So, yeah, but then you don't really get the evil B.D. Wongs.
Not enough evil B.D., you know?
That's like the best part about, like, what was it? Lost World, the new one? Whatever one with Chris Pratt.
Yeah, the
like
bad
evil
ones.
B.D. Wong is like, yes, InGen. I mean, I don't root for the bad guys, but sometimes
B.D.
Yes.
Close it out.
We can wrap it up. There's nothing else to talk about. My brain is mush. Yeah, but just, you know, for all these people out there wondering how I survived the past 36 hours of work, preparation's key. BD. You got to have the preparation, you know? It's like prepping for a hurricane.
Preparation
coverage.
And B.D. Wong.
You know? Always have food in your car, always have water in your car, and you'll make it through. So that being said, thanks everyone for sticking with us and listening to this. It's, what is this, 42 episodes, AT?
42, the answer to all the ultimate question in the universe, 42.
And despite, you know, natural disasters like the tornadoes and riots and protests that we've seen, this is the first time we had to delay a podcast, and that's because John C. Calhoun took his time coming down, but he is down now, and we'll keep up with this ongoing debate about these monuments, Confederate symbols, and other things going forward. That'll be something we see more discussion on from the State House in September. So keep up with the latest on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And also don't forget to support your local newspapers. They were out there too in the heat all night and all day during the Calhoun statue coming down too. So a lot going on there. They do a lot of good work as well. And you can always listen to us on South Carolina Public Radio. We have plenty of reports on there as well, and southcarolinapublicradio.org. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this week. And as this COVID-19 situation continues to develop, we are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. No, I don't care what the cost. As you can see, the check is blank. The check is blank. I have part of the Sphinx in my backyard.
You ever wonder where his nose is? It's in my bathroom.